Trump announced that U.S. Special Forces had killed the leader of ISIS, the world's most wanted terrorist. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is Baghdadi now, and they got him during a raid in Syria. Now, President Trump was reportedly golfing when they went in. The raid started at 3:30 p.m. According to his schedule, Trump was playing golf at his course in Northern Virginia Saturday until a little after 3. Didn't make it back to the White House until 4:18. But here's my bet on that. And I don't know, but there's no way the military told him what day this raid was happening, right? Because he immediately would have tweeted, "Guess what's going on?" I mean, I think, and this is just a guess, but I think he okayed the idea of a raid and they started it without him. The same way you don't tell grandpa about a surprise party, right? Either way, the White House released this photo. This photo was taken at 5:05, about an hour and a half after the raid started. You can see here the president and his team watching or pretending to watch from the Situation Room. You know he was so happy. A triumphant president addressed the nation to share this very good news in a surprisingly tasteful and, dare I say, presidential way.
Baghdadi and the losers who worked for him, and losers they are, they had no idea what they were getting into. In some cases, they were very frightened puppies.
Wait, he's killing puppies now? Because
he died like a dog. He died like a coward. He was whimpering, screaming, and crying.
He died like a dog. What does that even mean, he died like a dog? He accidentally ate one of those giant-sized Hershey bars? What happened? This stuff about crying and whimpering is an unusually specific detail for a president to share. So a reporter followed up to ask how specifically he knew that.
You mentioned whimpering. Could you hear that on your video hookup? Mentioned the whimpering of Baghdadi.
I don't want to talk about it, okay. But he was screaming, crying, and whimpering.
All right, so he probably, maybe he imagined that. I don't know. The defense secretary and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff said they didn't hear whimpering. Maybe he was hearing Mike Pence whimpering in the corner. Is that possible? The president was all over the place. He was in full Baghdadi mode. He even went so far as to compare the terrorist to himself.
You know, these people are very smart. They're not into the use of cell phones anymore. They're very technically brilliant. You know, they use the internet better than almost anybody in the world, perhaps other than Donald Trump.
So if you're keeping score, the top two users of the internet are number one, Donald Trump, and number two, ISIS. Maybe we do need to lock them up. Donald Trump should probably read these tweets from someone named Donald Trump, who in 2012 tweeted, "Obama deserves much less credit for the killing of bin Laden. The praise goes to our brave military intelligence officers. Why don't we ask the Navy SEALs who killed bin Laden? They don't seem to be happy with Obama claiming credit. All he did is say okay. And stop congratulating Obama for killing Osama bin Laden. The Navy SEALs killed bin Laden." See, there's no one better at using the internet than him. You think he even... Do you think he even knows he wrote that stuff?
The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is dead.
The United States launched a targeted operation against that compound.
They did a lot of shooting, and they did a lot of blasting, even not going through the front door. You know, you think you go through the door. If you're a normal person, you say, "Knock, knock, may I come in?"
After a firefight, they killed Osama bin Laden and took custody of his body.
He died like a dog.
But his death does not mark the end of our effort.
A beautiful dog. A talented dog.
We give thanks for the men who carried out this operation.
And I don't get any credit for this, but that's okay. I never do. But here we are.
May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
And I'm writing a book. I think I wrote 12 books. All did very well.
Which special operations teams were involved?
Many of them. And at the top level.
He killed bin Laden.
He didn't kill bin Laden. You know, he gets so much credit for that. Okay, excuse me.
He authored.
Excuse me.
He had the guts to make that decision.
And the genius, excuse me, guts. I don't know why Obama gets credit for the whole bin Laden thing. He's sitting there. He's got three choices. Leave him alone, which nobody would do. Take him out with a missile, or take him out with the military. So he said, take him out with the military. Okay. Congratulations. I keep hearing about, oh, bin Laden. The military did an incredible job. And they called him and they said, we have him. And he said, go get him. What's he going to say? Don't get him? And he gets all this credit? It's a lot of
On Friday, we found out that President Trump's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani, had accidentally butt-dialed a reporter twice, leaving voicemails about Ukraine and Rudy's need for cash, which means we are officially at the point where these guys are confessing out of their mouths and out of their a**s. The next time they talk about leaks, remember, they mean Rudy's a**s.
Tomorrow, I got to get you to get on Boeing. You got to call.
Yeah, hold on.
Got to call Robert again tomorrow. Is Robert around?
Robert.
The problem is, we need some money. $20,000.
Today is decorated combat veteran Alexander Vindman, who works as the top Ukraine expert at the White House, headed to Capitol Hill to testify in the impeachment investigation into Donald Trump. He did so after being accused of being a spy by right-wing defenders of the president. It's a despicable smear on a man who says he voiced his concerns about Donald Trump's demand for dirt on political rivals from the Ukrainians out of a sense of duty. The case against the president gains an unimpeachable witness and one with firsthand knowledge of the phone call that put the president's impeachment in motion. Vindman, who served multiple overseas tours and was awarded a Purple Heart for his service in Iraq, testified that he reported to his superiors on two occasions his concerns about the pressure campaign against the Ukrainians who were being asked to deliver political favors to the president. In his opening statement, Vindman describes his alarm over what he heard on the president's call, saying this, quote, I was concerned by the call. I did not think it was proper to demand that a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen, and I was worried about the implications for the U.S. government's support of Ukraine. I realized that if Ukraine pursued an investigation into the Bidens and Burisma, it would likely be interpreted as a partisan play, which would undoubtedly result in Ukraine losing the bipartisan support it has thus far maintained. This would all undermine U.S. national security. Following the call, I again reported my concerns to NSC's lead counsel. Vindman also delivering an implicit rebuke of the misconduct he witnessed, saying this, quote, I am a patriot, and it is my sacred duty and honor to advance and defend our country, irrespective of party or politics. For over 20 years as an active duty United States military officer and diplomat, I have served this country in a nonpartisan manner and have done so with the utmost respect and professionalism for both Republicans and Democrats. Reports from Capitol Hill today also strongly suggest that Republicans were determined to learn more about the whistleblower's identity from Vindman. Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz telling NBC News what she saw behind closed doors, saying this, quote, what the Republicans are trying to do very clearly in their questioning is try to front door, back door Vindman into revealing who the whistleblower is.
Vindman's testimony this morning, or all day today, really has been very credible. Every Republican and Democratic lawmaker who came out talked about someone who is a very serious professional, dedicated his life to this country, came once again with notes and specific details about his concerns about the president's behavior, and not just on that phone call. Remember, Vindman is important in part because he is the first witness who was actually listening to that phone call to come testify. And while he raised concerns about what he heard on that phone call, he also raised concerns weeks earlier in another meeting in which he heard the same language being used by Gordon Sondland, the president's ambassador to the EU, about linking investigations of the Bidens to military aid. So Vindman was on the record not once, but twice with his concerns, and he goes a little bit further. He's very important to Democrats in particular because he makes an explicit argument that what the president did weakens America's national security. Democrats have hung their entire impeachment strategy on making this about something bigger than another presidential no-no. They have said that the president's actions hurt national security. Vindman says the same thing, that by connecting our defense of Ukraine on the front line against Russia to political prerogatives of the president of the United States, the president put national security at risk.
Donald Trump confessed to essentially an impeachable act. Donald Trump confessed to asking Ukraine to investigate Biden. Mick Mulvaney corroborated it when he said, "We do it all the time, get over it." Bill Taylor last week confirmed it in his testimony, mm-hmm. and Colonel Vindland explained it today. And the dispositive statement that Vindland left, and Garrett referred to this earlier, is he said, "My concern is that it would undermine the national security mm-hmm. of the United States." That is the frame that the colonel has provided around all of the confessions and corroborations and confirmation. And it is why I have said this before, I believe it with certainty, Donald Trump will become the third president impeached by the House of Representatives, the fourth if you include Nixon. And the longer this goes on, though the likelihood is still small, I think the likelihood grows that he could be facing expulsion through a conviction in the United States Senate.
For just the fourth time in all of American history, the House of Representatives will formally proceed with an official, open impeachment inquiry into the President of the United States. The House resolution introduced today reveals the scope of the inquiry as it proceeds into a public phase. This was the statement issued by the four House committee chairs leading the probe. Quote, "The House impeachment inquiry has collected extensive evidence and testimony, and soon the American people will hear from witnesses in an open setting. The resolution introduced today in the House Rules Committee will provide that pathway forward. The resolution provides rules for the format of open hearings in the House Intelligence Committee, including staff-led questioning of witnesses, and it authorizes the public release of deposition transcripts. The resolution also establishes procedures for the transfer of evidence to the Judiciary Committee as it considers potential articles of impeachment, and it sets forth due process rights for the president and his counsel in the Judiciary Committee proceedings. The evidence we have already collected paints the picture of a president who abused his power by using multiple levers of government to press a foreign country to interfere in the 2020 election. Following in the footsteps of previous impeachment inquiries, the next phase will move from closed depositions to open hearings, where the American people will learn firsthand about the president's misconduct."
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah. Thank you. Hi, this is Bill from Bristol, PA. You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ACRA.
Honey, did you know the Roelof Janssen Community Library serves Ankrum, Copaic, and Hillsdale?
As a matter of fact, I did know that. Ask me another.
Did you know that the Rojan Library has thousands of books, audiobooks, DVDs, and music CDs you can enjoy for free?
Yep, I knew that too.
Did you know that the Rojan Library puts on dozens of special programs like concerts and lectures, story time for kids, and seminars on computer skills and estate planning?
Uh-huh.
Well, Smarty Pants, is there anything about the Rojan Library you don't know?
Yeah, how do they get all that great stuff done with just three employees?
It's all about the volunteers. The library depends on volunteers for everything from working the circulation desk to staffing special events. They can always use more help.
Sounds like fun. How can I become a volunteer?
Just go to the library's website at rojanlibrary.org and click on the volunteer tab.
Hey, I knew that.
Sure you did.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Andrew Barwick of Brooklyn, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're listening to Wireless Reconnaissance, Broadcast Surveillance, Transmission Art, and more Saturdays on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio.
Revolution is underway. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. Puerto Rico, Hong Kong, Ecuador, Haiti, Lebanon, Iraq, and now Chile. People are rising up around the world against austerity and corruption, defying police forces unleashed to suppress them. Many of these mass movements share a fierce critique of capitalism. In Santiago, Chile, more than a million people flooded the streets last weekend. Mass protests continue. There, the brutal Pinochet dictatorship from 1973 to 1990, during which thousands of progressive activists and leaders were tortured, disappeared, and murdered, was followed by decades of neoliberal policies. With rampant privatization, union busting, stagnant wages, and increased costs for education, health care, transportation, and other services— Chile, among the richest countries in South America, is also one of the most unequal. At least 20 people have been killed during recent protests there, further angering and emboldening the crowds. These global protests also occur at a critical inflection point in history, with as few as 10 years remaining for humanity to transition from a fossil fuel economy to one powered by renewable energy. On Wednesday, Chile's embattled billionaire president, Sebastián Piñera, abruptly announced his country is canceling plans to host two major international summits, the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation Meeting in mid-November, known as APEC, and the United Nations Climate Summit, the 25th Conference of the Parties, or COP25, in the first 2 weeks of December. Carolina Schmidt, Chile's COP25 president-designate, said, "The citizens have expressed in a strong way their legitimate social demands that require the full attention and all efforts from the government," unquote. Chile's cancellation of the COP could be a setback for global action on climate, but climate activists should take heart. This renewed spirit of rebellion around the world signifies a rejection of the status quo and could portend accelerated grassroots mobilization to avert irreversible, catastrophic climate change. The Climate Action Network said in a release not long after Chile's COP cancellation, social injustice and the climate crisis have a common root cause. They wrote, climate justice and solidarity is fundamentally about the protection of human rights and a better quality of life for all, unquote. The climate crisis touches everyone, first and most forcefully, the world's poor. The mass uprising in Puerto Rico that forced the resignation of Governor Ricardo Rosselló was the culmination of decades of frustration with Puerto Rico's colonial status and the more current exploitation by Wall Street vulture funds. But the discontent was fueled by the utter devastation of the back-to-back hurricanes Irma and Maria 2 years ago.
The austerity policies that have been implemented not only by the Fiscal Control Board, but by the current Rosselló administration, the previous Garcia Padilla administration, have put the people of Puerto Rico at a position of vulnerability. Social inequality have increased to levels that we have never seen here in Puerto Rico.
That's Manuel Natal, a member of Puerto Rico's House of Representatives, speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour days before Rosselló's resignation.
We need more democracy, not less democracy. We are at the verge or at the brink of a political revolution here in Puerto Rico.
Rosselló's ouster was the first time in U.S. history that a governor was forced from office by popular protest. Indigenous people are also leading the way, often at the front lines, confronting resource extraction with disciplined, nonviolent resistance. Hundreds of indigenous and campesino social leaders in Colombia have been murdered in recent years simply for standing up for justice and environmental protection. The Paris Climate Agreement specifically notes the importance of climate justice and pledges to, quote, work in context of sustainable development and efforts to eradicate poverty, unquote. One of the enduring conflicts that's hampered international climate negotiations has been the refusal by wealthy nations, principally the United States, to accept the simple premise that polluters pay. The United States is the wealthiest nation in human history because, in part, it's polluted its way to the top using cheap, dirty power, coal-fired power plants, diesel locomotives, and now so-called clean-burning fracked gas. The Green Climate Fund was supposed to raise billions of dollars to finance renewable projects in poorer countries. The fund's pledging conference last week fell short of its goal, primarily because the Trump administration reneged on the U.S.'s $2 billion commitment. Australia and Russia followed suit, refusing to make contributions. A new study by Climate Central, a news and science organization, shows that climate-induced coastal flooding will likely be far worse than previously predicted, forcing between 200 and 600 million people, rich and poor, to flee their homes later in the century. Climate change-fueled wildfires are now raging across California, with hundreds of thousands of people evacuated from their homes and at least 1 million people without power. Popular uprisings are also spreading like wildfire, though, against corrupt autocratic leaders, austerity and inequality. People are also flooding the streets globally, linking the movements against inequality with the fight for a just, sustainable world powered by renewable energy. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
We'll be right back.
Thank you. Thank you.